This week's episode has a trigger warning for potentially upsetting subject matter. Check the show notes at www.bitchesoncomics.com to find out more.
Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, Essie Fleenor.
Hello, I am Sarah Century, and today we have a very special guest with us, Stephanie Williams. Welcome back to the pod, Stephanie.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here because I just knew that you all knew that I was going to want to talk about this character because she is near and dear to my heart. So the moment Essie was like, hey, you want to come talk about this character? I said immediately. I'm like, I even wrote out notes. Like the old fashioned way. I'm so prepared.
Oh man, you know, it's just it's always exciting to have you on the pod, obviously. You are brilliant and delightful, which is my favorite combination. You're also hysterical. A little icing on the cake, if you will. Today we're gonna talk entirely about Monica Rambeau. But first, Steph, I hear you have some fun updates for us. I wanna hear from you.
I do. So my Twitter handle is still there, hopefully, but it got suspended briefly because Twitter doesn't like fun. So I had like a bunch of DMCA takedowns from the little videos that I do. It's like, you know, the artists, they're benefiting from this. And also these clips, they're also benefiting from it. Everyone's winning. Folks are going to go watch X-Men, TAS, Batman, all of that. So leave me alone. But anyway, I'm back. It's Steph_I_Will. And hopefully by the time you listen to this episode, my Monica Rambeau story is out in Marvel Voices Legacy. And I'm really excited for you all to read it because it is very much Stephanie. I did not, what people like to say, like, change because corporate came knocking. No, I said, you all came here for a reason, so I'm going to give you that reason. So I gave them exactly what they asked for.
Hell yes. And I actually think it's going to come out next week. So actually, listener, you still have time probably to get it on your pull list. So go talk to your local comic book store. Say, hello, dear comic book store. You are my friends. Please give me Marvel Voices number one featuring Stephanie Williams, among others. And then you'll get to read the story.
It's really fun, y'all.
I can't wait. It's Monica-based, right? But you also bring in some of your faves, like Thor and She-Hulk. Is that right?
Yes. And Monica's mom is there. They're at the supermarket. Things are happening. It's ultra-relatable. So, you know, again, they gave me two pages and I said, well, let me make sure I leave my mark so that one, hopefully you all call me again. But if you never do, folks will be like, hey, why did you never call Stephanie Williams back?
And then you could show them the comic. Well, you know, I'm excited. I feel like superheroes need the sort of love and enthusiasm you bring. There's so much interesting conversation around superheroes these days. And so I'm pumped to see someone who knows them well and loves them getting, you know, right there in the thick of things. So I'm excited.
Thank you.
So we are talking about the incredible Monica Rambeau, who I feel like is on everyone's minds right now because of WandaVision, which is exciting.
Yes.
And now we've got Steph's comic coming out, which is just, I am so ready for like the new hordes, masses of people who's screaming Monica Rambeau's name. That's what I vision for the future because that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. We need it.
Yeah.
We need it.
Overdue.
So, okay, Steph, Sarah, you all have been reading comics for fucking ever. Tell me about Monica. How did you meet her? What made you love her? And then, you know, we'll go from there into talking about some of the older representations as well, of course.
So, yeah, I'll go first because it's funny. My first introduction to Monica was actually through Next Wave, which I feel completely different about after.
What? I didn't know that. That was my first introduction to Monica.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sarah's like, boo, boo, boo.
Oh, wow.
But, so, color me, like, imagine my surprise when I actually went back to get, like, really acquainted with Monica Rambeau through her origin story and Amazing Spider-Man Annual 16 and then her time with the Avengers. And then when I worked my way back to Next Wave, I said, now, what is this? Like, I get it. Please put your tweets away. I know that Next Wave is like a soft continuity situation and, you know, it's just a different take on superheroes. It's The Boys without the boys. And like that whole like, these are heroes, but they're also very cranky and irritable, and they probably won't save you, but they will do it begrudgingly, and they're sarcastic and all of those things. Like, I get it. But even still, I would like to argue that it still wasn't true to Monica's character. Like, for Boom Boom and Elsa Bloodstone, like, I can see it kind of fit them. But for Monica, it was just kind of very far left. And I said, no. And then I got to Marvel Divas and I wanted to throw up.
Yeah.
Marvel Divas, which as we were preparing to talk on air, we realized isn't, let me quote, an homage to Sex and the City. Who's asking for that? Who was like, you know what is missing from my life? An homage to Sex and the City with superheroes where they use gay men like little pawns. That's what I miss. No, I don't like it.
Oh, God, I can't believe it.
Oh, that pitch meeting, wow.
Woo, yeah.
And like still written by men.
Yeah, yeah. They did that a lot back then. There was like the Witches series and like all of those series that were like girl stuff. And it was like, and here is the male creative team that is bringing it to you.
You know who has real insight into women's experiences?
These weirdly men. Horny dudes. For sure.
Self-insert motherfuckers.
Oh my God.
Okay, Sarah, so where did you meet Monica?
In a much better place. The place that I met Monica was just reading old issues of The Avengers. I remember getting kind of like a mismatched box of comics at a certain point that were from that era. And so there was a bunch of good old weird Marvel stuff happening. But the best part was I was introduced to Monica and Janet Van Dyne, both right around the same time. And I love both of them equally. And also, that's what I know She-Hulk from. A lot of people talk about like John Byrne's run and stuff. And I'm just like, no, I know her from when she was not written by John Byrne.
Woo!
I know her from this cool era where she like goes to bat for Monica and becomes good friends with her. It was very mismatched. So I would have only read, I believe it was maybe the issue where She-Hulk stands up for Monica to Thor, right? Because I think Thor's like, oh, I guess I'll just be leader because I'm the guy or whatever. And then like She-Hulk's just like, no, Monica's the leader or whatever. I don't remember the specifics of that scene.
I do because I'm very weird and yes. It's Avenger 279.
Thank you. I would have guessed right around there. Yeah. But yeah, it was so good. I loved her and I loved everything about her and wanted to learn more. And then like years passed before I saw her again.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was the leader of the Avengers. She was a major feature in many things. And then from 1990 to like 2005, she was just showing up in pinch hitting roles.
Yeah.
She was doing nothing major. And it was just, I don't know, she just constantly feels like this underutilized character in the later comics, not back in the heyday.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll say is I was thinking about this because I was like, what is a positive thing that I would say about Next Wave? I actually really like her uniform in Next Wave.
Right.
Yeah, it's nice. You can't go wrong with a trench coat.
I mean, she always looks amazing.
Yeah.
Like, even when she's got those weird wing things, I'm like, yes.
I don't know what they do, but I think they look amazing.
I approve of. Well, she, you know, because she flies. I'm like, ooh, like, okay, you want to look fluttery in the wind? I'm with it. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So now, Steph, you've gone back and I mean, obviously you said that you went back and read a bunch of the Avengers appearances. What do you think are some of your favorite moments for her in the Avengers?
Oh my God. I have a list. So hold tight. We have to mention, we have to talk about just briefly Amazing Spider-Man Annual 16 because that is her debut. And right. It is one of the best Marvel origin stories that I've ever read. And actually one of the best comic origin stories to me, period, because of just the way that things go down. Like,
mm-hmm.
You have this woman who is being slighted at work. How is that not relatable? And after that happens, she meets this scientist who's no friend of a family member. Gotta love that. And he asks for her help and she agrees to help because that's what Monica does. And she saves the day without any power. She smashes with her bare hands this energy generator or whatever it is and gets her powers. And by the end of the story, you come to realize, or at least I hope you do, that Monica Rambeau, regardless of whatever her title is, she's going to be the person to get the job done and be the team player that you want to have. This is the person that you want on a team of other folks where you're supposed to be working together to save the day. This is exactly who you want.
Yeah, 100%. I think that Monica is such a good leader. And whenever she steps into her leadership role in Avengers, it just gets so, so good.
One of the things I really love about Monica and I'm enjoying seeing in WandaVision is that I do feel like she leads with so much empathy. And I mean, yes, in a leadership role, but I actually mean in everything she does. She comes from such a place of wanting to care about other people. And so the idea that she would smash something with her bare hands to save the day is yes, of course, Monica would do that. Mm-hmm. What else would Monica do?
No, and it makes so much sense. And I think that is why I've been loving this depiction of Monica that we're getting in WandaVision, because someone did their homework. Someone didn't just read Next Wave and Marvel Divas and then decide to write Monica, because that would be terrible.
Less
and
good,
I would have all the bad things to say, but someone right. actually went back and was okay, so what makes this character, who she is, and why do people love her? And we're getting that, we're seeing that the writer's room, they spend time with Monica in her early Avengers run and got it, because she definitely is someone who leads with empathy and not to her detriment on top of that. I just want to stress that, Monica's going to help, but it's not going to be in a way that is going to, take away from her character, if that makes sense. A lot of times we'll see Black characters used as fodder to move along the story for this white character, but that's not what's happening in WandaVision. I'm very grateful for that, because unfortunately, that's a little bit of what we got, or a lot of bit of what we got in Captain Marvel with her mom, Maria Rambeau, and Carol Danvers, which I also hope they correct in Captain Marvel 2.
Right. It's Nia DaCosta is going to direct it, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I heard. And I'm just like, what, dude? that is going to be great. I can't wait for that. That is going to rule. Yeah. I'm so hyped for that already.
Yes. Same.
But also, oh my God. Yeah. Monica in WandaVision is so incredible. I loved it. And whenever she comes into the show, it gets so, so good. Whenever you see her and she's like, oh, I'm Geraldine. That part was already pretty funny. And then I don't know how much we should spoil this, but she gets returned to reality time. And the episode where that happens, I think it just gets so, so good, because it's the Monica focus episode. Yes. So it's so nice to see her under focus again, because when we talk about the original Avengers stuff that she was appearing in, I really don't think she's had that much of a chance to make that appearance since then. And she hasn't had that same presence in Marvel this entire time. So it's just seeing her on the TV series is thank God.
Well, and she's so funny in it. And I think
she is. Yeah.
She's such a funny character. I think Monica has a really funny way of looking at things. And so, she just calls it like she sees it. And in Next Wave and in Marvel Divas, I almost see that perverted might be an overstatement, but twisted, certainly.
Yeah.
And used where she becomes vindictive and simple. Yeah. Those two things. And haughty, which is fucking white people making Black characters haughty is oh my God, have you never seen anything? Have you never seen a single thing and know that you just shouldn't do that? Oh, I won't even.
Well, I mean, and this isn't necessarily a spoiler for WandaVision, but I feel like a lot of stuff that they do is very meta, because there's a point where director Tyler Edgelord is like, hey, which one of you is, the sassy best friend? And my ears perked up in that moment, because I was like, okay, I see what you all are doing, and I really appreciate it, because you know, that's a dig at, you know, you've got these two women here. So which one is going to be more important and which one is going to be relegated to just the sassy friend like we often see in all forms of media, but definitely in comics and especially for, you know, Black characters where it's just like, yeah, I'm here to, you know, put my fist on my hip and, you know, tell you what you're not going to do, Mr. Man, and all that bullshit.
But Monica is so brave in WandaVision. The way that she's like struggling with the choice to return because it scares her so much. Oh my God. Yeah. Once again, I'm just going to stop because I don't want to spoil the show, but it's just really good. And seeing the way that she interacts with Wanda, I think is amazing. I've loved that part of it because she's definitely reaching out, but also is like, don't do that again.
Like, right. And yes, it makes sense. Yes. It makes sense for her character on top of that. Like, there's historic receipts, so to speak, of Monica, like, helping Wanda and also Vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think towards the end of this episode, we should definitely get into some spoilers. But I think in that moment, what also stood out to me was, you know, Darcy calls Hayward on his bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately tries to put her in her place and make her feel small. And then Monica is like, oh, hell no, she's with me. And that's when he says that sassy friend moment. And then yeah. I love that Wu is the one who steps up for them. Yes. Honestly, I'm like that. Those three people right there are actually modeling a lot of what I think a lot of us are looking for in how we actually work together against white men.
No, I like, totally agree.
Who are abusing their power, to be fair, not all of them. Not all white men. It's so quick, too. It's like a really rapid pace moment in the episode, and it speaks volumes. I think you're right, Steph. It's a nod to how Black women and women have been treated. It's a nod to how this person is trying to divide them and make them feel small. And I love that Monica's like, oh, no. Like, I know exactly who I am. It doesn't matter that I was gone for 5 years. I know who I am, and you don't impress me. And oh, my God, when he brings up her mom, I'm like, I would have cut him. I would have jumped across that table and, like, stabbed him.
I wanted, like, I saw red, and I'm just like, you, I hope that you sincerely regret that by the time this series is over. Like, I don't know who's going to be the one to give you the payback, but please know that all the seeds that you are sowing right now, you are going to reap.
Oh, yeah.
All
you
of
are
it.
Not going to like it. Okay, well, so, you know, we'll get into some WandaVision spoilers in a little bit because I think we can't help it. And none of the three of us have talked about it yet, so I can't wait. But, Steph, I'm curious for you, when you think of who Monica is, in addition to her empathy, what do you think are some of the defining features of what makes Monica, like, when you're reading a story, when are you like, oh, this is Monica, oh, this is a weird take on Monica? Like, what's the difference there?
Like, she knows what she's doing. Even when she first joins the Avengers, of course, like anyone who is starting something new is like, one, wants to do her best to prove that, hey, I should be here. And then two, is just effortlessly good at what she does. Like, again, this is why I'm just like, no matter the name, Monica is like Captain Marvel, or just amazing because she just does things so effortlessly and so fearlessly. And that's what I think of every time I think of this character, someone who not only wants to do right, but also wants to make sure that the people around her and also, I don't want to say the villains, but the people around her are also like taking care of themselves. Because there is a moment in, what is it, Avengers 233, where there's this force field that goes up randomly and no one can get through it. The Vision phases through it and it knocks him unconscious. And so Wanda's, of course, freaking out because she can't get to her husband. And Monica talks to Star Fox, who suggests to her, because she's still learning her powers, like, okay, you can turn into like any kind of electromagnetic frequency, right? So why don't you do this thing? And it wasn't like a mansplaining moment. It was just a, hey, let's figure this out. So they do, and she slingshots herself around the sun and turns into like a gamma ray laser beam and destroys the force field. So that's great. It's solved. But the part that really stood out to me is that, you know, of course, Wanda is still concerned because Vision is unconscious, and like Monica's there. Like Monica is there for Wanda, just like, yo, I have always like been like enamored with you and like really thought highly of you, but I'm here as a friend now. And like, you don't have to be alone, because that's a lot of Wanda's bag, with this feeling of being alone. And Wanda and also Janet are just like, hey girl, we're here for you. You know, we'll get through this. Vision will be fine. But in the meantime, like, we're here. And I love that, because she did the superpower hero thing, but then at the very same time was just there for her teammate when she needed her there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early Avengers, her dynamic with a lot of the other characters is so, so good. I love her and Janet being friends. I like the way that Janet is such an outgoing personality and Monica is a little bit more reserved.
Yeah.
Because that team up is always just fun for me, like the outgoing person with like the person who's a little bit more introverted. Always fun to watch. And yeah, she's good friends with She-Hulk in it. And the way that the other Avengers are kind of, they don't think that she can hack it in the beginning. And outwardly, she doesn't show anything about that. She's just like, no, I think that we should hear them out and like let everybody say their piece. That was one of the big benefits to me of reading that Avengers run, is like we see her inner thoughts all of the time. Like she's a major part of that story as the leader of the Avengers. And so she has this inner monologue where she is constantly questioning herself. And every time somebody criticizes her, she's like, is that true? Am I that? Mm-hmm. Am I able to do this? And then she just always kind of has to go back to like, there's people here that support me and I have to go forward, you know, and like all of that. And I feel like that to me is something that stands out a lot about Monica. And I think that we see that too in WandaVision, is part of the thing that they nail with this character is that you see her processing and not necessarily being reactionary, right? Like mm-hmm. she listens to people even when she doesn't like what they're saying. And then she acts when she has to. And so those are all things that I think really do indicate that like they must have read those old Avengers stories, because like that's where she's like that. And that's kind of even now the best Monica arc.
I could not agree more.
Y'all are making me cry.
Oh my God.
It's just so good.
She's so amazing. She's so amazing. Like, even in her worst representations, when I see her, I feel something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel something when I read Monica, because she's so human despite her superhuman abilities. And she's so willing to meet people where they are to an extent, which I like. I like that she's like,
and then she's very no bullshit. And like the no bullshit part is the part that you love too, because it's like she'll let people go so far. And then she's like, all right.
Big Taurus energy, if I may.
Yes.
I think she's a Taurus.
Because like in Avengers 282 through 284, there's this whole story with Hercules and Zeus and them and Attack on Olympus. Mm-hmm. And in this, it's really funny because Zeus comes in and he's like angry, and like there's Captain America, She-Hulk, I think the Black Knight is there, Namor's there.
The most volatile of all of the Avengers teams, like the one that's the very worst. Like, we must always emphasize that Monica inherited the worst, most bratty Avengers team ever. Sorry,
she did, because like I even forgot like Thor is there too. So like you're absolutely right. Like she gets the like the loose cannons. But she holds it down because Zeus comes in and like he like hits everybody with a thunderbolt, and Monica is the one to have enough sense. Like, I'm just going to transfer myself into energy so that I am not laid out. And like Cap gets his legs broken, so then Namor takes Cap's shield, which is like, okay, y'all, I guess. I don't know how you're going to get out of this situation. And then in the next issue, I think it's 283, like Zeus is still hot. Hercules is under some influence, and Thor is fighting Zeus and getting beat. But is of course still holding his own because he's still a god. And Monica steps forth because Thor is under a tree now, and like her head is held high, her chest is puffed up, and she's like, yo, Zeus, enough of this. I'm not really sure what you're trying to prove, but I'm tired. we're all tired. You're really doing the most. Like, I'm going to take you out now. So Thor, while he's under this tree branch, is like, hey, this is no place for a mere mortal. And Monica's like, anyway, Zeus, I hit you with something before, but I didn't hit you hard enough. So let me hit you with this other, like, a massive amount of energy. And she does. Mm-hmm. And she actually hurts Zeus. And Thor finally gets up from underneath the tree and is like, okay, Monica, you've done enough. You've fought enough. And it's just kind of like, but what did you do?
What did you do, Thor? Thor, person who's trying to just like step casually into leadership of the Avengers after Monica is like cleaning it up.
But it's just, and then like Namor comes into the whole thing and he actually ends up getting beat up by Zeus. So it's just a really cool moment because here she is standing up to this literal god and she's like, hey, I'm tired of you beating my friends up. So I'm here to fix this because I took it easy on you before. Now I'm going to give you all I got. And she does give all she has. It's just not enough because it's Zeus. But I mean, it just says a lot about her character and how she's been written and why I don't understand how she's written currently. Because like that is a moment. It's Zeus.
Yeah. And of course, there's the workplace aggression from Dr. Druid through that entire run. He's so awful. Oh, man. And he like gaslights her so bad and like turns all of the Avengers against her because he thinks he should be the leader. So like the whole time he's just harboring like the most hostile work environment possible. And yet she still does a great job. Like she still makes it through. So even with all of those extra doubts on top of this guy literally trying to like mentally manipulate her, what a jerk that guy was. I think he died. And I think he's like one of the characters where Marvel's like, it's fine.
Let him be dead.
Yeah, just leave him gone. I don't even think I ever read another story with that guy in it, but I don't like him after that.
It's those doctors. Those doctor something, you gotta be careful around them. I've been trying to think about like, what is the thing that makes me cry when I think about Monica? Cause I do, I just like can't handle it. And I think it's, she goes through so much shit that we can all relate to. I was just talking to a friend yesterday about being in a workplace and the constant aggression and negging and blaming and the way that like men who can abuse their power do. And I'm like, oh, damn, you know, one of my favorite superheroes goes through that. Like, yeah, that's pretty relatable, you know, like to see her still find herself and I wouldn't even say like claim her power, like create power for herself, you know, in the face of no power. That is to me just incredibly inspiring.
And when she leaves the Avengers, right, like it's important to note as well that she is completely drained of energy and has to go like live with her parents for like a year.
Yeah, because what is it? Namor's wife turns into
Marina.
Marina turns into
Leviathan.
Yes, that thing. And like Monica pretty much is the reason why they're able to take her out. And I love that her parents are the ones that like the Avengers knew to call her parents because I don't know how we haven't talked about this, but they're so important to her character as well because they are an amazing support system. Like they support her in her superhero endeavors and they're there for her. And like even when Cap asks her to like, you know, leave the Avengers, she goes to talk to them about that in the meeting and what happened. And they're just so supportive because they're just like, hey, if Cap thinks you can do it, we think you can do it. So, you know, you got this or whatever. So they're there to pick her up and take her home and nurse her back to health. So when she comes back in Dwayne McDuffie's one shot of Captain Marvel, which I think came out in 89, I'm pretty sure it did. That story is amazing because, again, it shows that Monica Rambeau is going to be who she is no matter what the code name, whether she has her powers or not. Similar to the Storm in that regard because she's working, I think, a cruise ship or something like that, and it gets taken over by some guys that are very terrible. I think they go by Pride, but I could be lying. They murder people. They murder the crew, and she's there to save the rest of the passengers, and she takes them out. She doesn't have her powers, and she takes out this big giant guy called Powder Keg without her powers as well. And she actually ends up getting her powers back towards the tail end of this fight, but she had already handled things without her powers, which I don't know, like I always kind of love that when you can see someone still be heroic regardless, because it's just who they are and they just want to, you know, keep people safe as best they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always like questionable whenever you see, especially like women characters in general, be depowered in any mm-hmm. way. But then it's like, that is a good example of where it's like, no, this is just kind of establishing why she's such a badass. So
right.
This is like a different vibe entirely.
Totally. And it you want her to have powers. You're like, this is the person who should have powers, right? Like mm-hmm. she's going to help me and everyone else. Like, this is good. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Sarah. It's depowering is always a sensitive conversation when it comes to women because it's a form of fridging.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to see someone who isn't getting that because they're being punished right. by the creators. It doesn't, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it doesn't seem that's an instance of her being punished for something, you know, being too powerful, which, you know, is like Wonder Woman's whole thing. Oh, she's too powerful. Let's give her comic
now
to
she's
Steve.
Studying martial arts and like owns her own boutique or whatever, because it's 1974. Yeah, Jesus Christ. You
know, they punish her in other ways, though.
Yeah.
With her name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The name thing is wild.
You know... For what? Let's get into the name stuff. And listeners, I have let Bitches on Comics know that I have like my little list of Monica Rambeau stories that I would suggest that you read, because there is an omnibus that we're about to talk about that is, I don't know why they put it together because it's really bad, but the name changes. So Monica goes by Captain Marvel all the way up until, I believe, 96, because then Avengers Unplugged number 6 happens. And I don't know if this is a thing, because there's only been two women that have gone by Captain Marvel, herself and also Carol Danvers. But another thing they share in common, and trigger warning, I'm sorry for this, but is sexual assault, because that also happens to Monica in Unplugged. And it sucks because it's the same issue in which she gives her name to Marvel's son, Jonas Val, because, you know, he was Captain Marvel first or whatever. And because Monica is just such a pure heart, she's like, hey, this is your dad's name. You definitely should have this. So it's yours. I'll go by full time. But that's not the story. The story is actually really gross because Monica is being mind controlled by this villain. And it's called a slave chip. So clearly, whoever, editors, everybody just said whatever and just let a lot of stuff ride in that issue. And even when she has a moment towards the end of that issue to like take some type of justice for what happened against her or happened to her or whatever, they really play into her empathy in a very terrible way, because it's kind of like, well, no, I can see as I look into his eyes that he also is being controlled. So no, I'll just, you know, let him deal with that. I can feel the pain. Just kind of like, well, no, actually, I don't think Monica. I think Monica would probably want to whoop his ass and would.
Yeah.
And then, you know, say, I know that you're also going through something, but please catch these hands in the process.
Yeah. I would agree. I think that like when people display empathy as a weakness, it's like they don't fully understand how empathy works, or mm-hmm. that empathetic people develop a edge of like knowing what behavior endangers other people around them. So like having Monica show empathy to somebody who is hurtful, like it makes sense to that extent, but that's where it ends is not something that makes sense, right?
Right. Because, like, I mean, not to bring up WandaVision again, but to bring up WandaVision, like, what is going on in that show as far as what Wanda is doing or not fully doing herself is all very questionable. And even still, because Monica doesn't have all of the answers yet to questions, she's not villainizing Wanda. And I think that's important when it comes to talking about somebody who has empathy, because another thing is like, you're not going to jump to conclusions until you have all of the information you need to decide where you want to stand with this person. And mm-hmm. Monica is still displaying that. In this comic, she had all the information she needed to make a judgment call that I just don't believe would be, oh, he's hurting too, so I'll leave him alone. It's like, no, that I just don't. It just didn't add up.
And they don't see how when somebody hurts you, then they're going to hurt somebody else. Like, that's exactly. Like one of the worst parts of surviving assault is knowing that it's not going to end with you. Mm-hmm. And you often don't have anything that you can do about that. Whereas Monica could have definitely beat his ass. And mm-hmm. it would have been, honestly, like, even that wouldn't have been a better story, because it's just like, we just don't want to see this, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
At all. And like, there's certainly no need for it to be popping up again in an omnibus that's like a selecting of all of her best stories, because it's like, I would think that you guys would be a little bit embarrassed about this, but like,
yeah.
Instead, they're like throwing it right on in. And I find that questionable.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, I think people really fundamentally misunderstand what it means to be empathetic. People think of empaths as like crying a lot. True, I do cry a lot.
True.
as like being doormats. And I think that, yes, there is a tendency towards that. But if you're an empathetic person, you have to learn boundaries. It's really important because early, you have to like, learn. Yes, hard. You have to learn what's yours and what someone else's. Because it's hard to tell in your feelings sometimes. And actually, it's kind of like, you know, the idea that like justice is what love looks like in public. I actually think that like empathy has that to it, where it's like, actually, no, to be empathetic to someone, I let them pay for the consequences of their actions. I don't protect people from the fair consequences they have to deal with. And I think that that's just like a complete misunderstanding of what an empathetic person would do in that moment. I also feel my feelings very strongly. I don't think I'm going to be like, ah, this person's hurting too.
It's just, you know, one, the story should just have never happened. And then to have this happen to her and then to have her like give her name up on top of that is just like a double whammy. And I'm like, how are you proud of this? Because this is terrible.
And you're right, that's punishing her. You know, like those are the ways that she's punished in that story.
And silence too, because then we don't hear anything about it like ever again. So it's just like, well, this happened for no reason.
And then we get Marvel Divas where ladies hanging out to go shopping. Not like, oh, we've all been sexually assaulted. Maybe we would talk about that.
But it gets worse before we get to that, because
you're right.
She gives her name up again to the now Captain Marvel, because he couldn't remember that they had this conversation. This happens in New Thunderbolts number 9. Monica just randomly shows up in that. Like, I remember reading that entire series thinking that Monica was in the whole thing and she never popped up again before or after. And it was very upset. But anyway, she's there, like, she's ready to like fight Captain Marvel or Dennis or whatever. And they don't fight. There's actually some weird flirting that goes on, and they have a drink instead. And he's like, yeah, so I want to go by Photon now. And she's like, okay, but you were there when I said that I was going by Photon. And his excuse is, well, I think I forgot. He thought he forgot. He didn't just forget. He thought he forgot. And she's going, and she's like rattling off names. And she says something Pulsar. And he's like, well, I don't really like that for myself. And she's like, well, no, for me. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. And then she's just Pulsar. And I'm like, what are we doing right now? Like, are you kidding me? Like, you just brought this character in for this one moment to give her name again to this guy.
And like, and to this guy that sucks. Like, yes, that character sucks.
I didn't want to like slander him, but yes, he sucks so much.
And his I remember him mostly being written by like Peter David. So like, slander away. Like, he annoys me badly. And like that whole run, even though it's where we meet Phil Lavelle, like, which is rad, and it's, I love her, but she is the best part of the whole series. Like, the Captain Marvel series that's all about him is just throw it out. Like, not good, boring. Rick Jones comes back and he like, oh my God, like Moondragon and his ex-wife, Marlo, are dating. And then she's like, but I'm really straight, like the whole time, because bisexual people don't exist, right? And then Rick Jones comes back and wins her back by playing acoustic guitar and singing like, oh, baby, Marlo. Like, it's so bad. And then Moondragon's like salty as fuck, because who wouldn't be salty as fuck to like lose out to Rick Jones with an acoustic guitar? She's like, I'm literally a god. Like, what? So like, all of that is intense. So that's what I remember from that series. So I'm like, yeah, that guy can fuck right off. I hate him. I hate that character. And I didn't even describe anything that he does specifically, but he does fight with Phil Avella a lot, which is like, be nice to your sister, you chump. Anyway, I'm just mad about it. So yeah, the fact that like Monica is not in comics and yet we got that guy for like a 30 issue series is just like, all right.
Boo. So terrible. So infuriating. Oh,
heavy
God.
Sigh and boo at the same time. Pretty much a jinx.
I mean, yeah, that's the deal, right? Monica having such a weird all over the place name is just part of what is kind of depowering her in a way, because it's just like, well, she's this character, she's that character, you know, like here's her new name, but like she'll never probably go back to being Captain Marvel, which was when she was the leader of the Avengers. And so like it just becomes part of Marvel just admitting to our faces that they have no idea what to do with this character.
Totally.
It's just like, so maybe it'll improve soon.
And it's just like, but there's stuff for you to do with this character. You just don't want to do it. And that's the most infuriating thing about it, because Storm kind of has this as well. And even Misty Knight to a degree, where like in the Bronze Age, you had an idea of who they were. And you could tell that the writers also had an idea of who they were. And like, were there things that could be improved upon? Of course, because they're written by white men. So of course, there's a ton of stuff that could be improved. But at the core of it, like they are still fully formed characters for the most part. Like you get like the stuff that makes them tick, their motivations, all of that. And weird stuff happens in the 90s and they get kind of shuffled, and maybe there's a good story here and there, but it's not consistent. And then we get to the early aughts and it's just like even worse stuff happening. And then later aughts, because then there is Next Wave, and then there's Marvel Divas, and you can tell that the person who wrote Marvel Divas read Next Wave, and that was their introduction to Monica, and I hate it.
You can tell that the person hates women.
Yes, and this is, like, I would never, ever suggest to someone who's starting off with Monica Rambeau to read Next Wave first. Like, I want that to be probably the very last thing that you read, so that when you finally get to that, you understand that, again, I don't need anyone explaining to me. Like, I understand what the take and what was supposed to be accomplished in that comic. I get it, but even still getting to that point, it just doesn't fit her character. Like, she's cynical in a way that doesn't make sense. The way that she's cynical in Mighty Avengers and Captain America and the Avengers makes a little bit more sense. And you can tell that Al Ewing is like trying to address and help Monica unpack those 12 issues of Next Wave.
It does get frustrating though, because sometimes they kind of switch her to just like other Carol Danvers, right? Like, I feel like a lot of times you just kind of get that vibe from her, where it's like, yeah, she's kind of annoyed with everybody and like over it, which like, fair enough, you know, if I'm Monica Rambeau, probably I'm a little annoyed with everybody too, but like, it doesn't fit her character.
I mean, in WandaVision, she's annoyed, but she doesn't come across as like, oh, I'm miniature or younger Captain Marvel, meaning Carol Danvers. Like, she is a person on her own right. What? Never heard of that before.
And that was my fear.
Yeah, I mean, I was terrified going into it.
Same. I do want to mention because, well, basically just because I'm gay, but like, I want to mention that whenever Monica looks up, and is like, they're just like, oh, hey, so like, we could call like Captain Marvel, and Monica's just like, we're not talking about her.
I lived in that moment.
I was like, she does owe child support, right? Like,
that's the part where I thought it too.
Right? I'm like, I don't know what happened, and we'll find out, but it's the old child support, and also like, something happened. There's static there, and I want that to be, like, I want it addressed, and I want it addressed immediately. But when she gave that little side look and then basically rolled her own credits on Darcy and Jimmy and went right to the board and was like, okay, now back to what we were talking about.
And they both are like, oh, damn.
but that's a Monica moment, though. Like, that is Monica being, like, very... funny, because that was funny to me, but funny and like snippy in a way that is very still true to her character, because, you know, still a little polite, but also at the same time, like, it was
boundaries. She has boundaries because she's an empath. And when you're an empath, you learn to have boundaries.
Thank you, Essie, because it's exactly that.
Totally. I mean, she's not going to let someone manipulate her into doing something she doesn't want to do. She's not going to sit for another set of x-rays. She's not going to let them take more of her blood. Even if she's not quite cognizant of her doubt, you know that the doubt is there then. She knows something's up with Hayward, you know? She's like, this is just not how this goes down, you know?
I'm also just like, Carol, how did you let your wife die in a hospital by herself? Like, what is up, Carol? You and your beautiful swooshy hair and... so beautiful in your face.
I'm kind of wondering if there is a connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monica's just like, not only do you owe me checks, like literal checks, but also
a goddamn explanation is what you owe me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to, I saw some people talking about how the specificity of Carol's rage in Endgame makes a lot more sense when you realize Maria is gone. She's been snapped. I just got chills saying it. Like, I'm very emotional about it. And I was like, that's a great point. Like, I think they've done something really, and I think we can get into spoiler zone now. So if you have not watched WandaVision, I know we've done some mild spoilers, but I'm taking the leash off. We're going to go wild. So if you have not seen it, take the time you need away to go watch it and come back and join us.
Hey, everybody, life is hard, right? Like, lots going on all the time. Guess what? I'm going to add one more thing to your enormous pile of things to do, which is, if you got a second, please do us a favor, rate and review our podcast. It helps us a whole bunch. If you want to hear more episodes, then that's the way to do it, really, is just go ahead and click on the 5 stars, the one that's 5. Give us all of the stars. That's the way to do it. You can do that on many platforms. For instance, iTunes, that's one where you can do it.
Podchaser.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So if this is like a Podchaser thing for you, if like every week you're on Podchaser listening to Bitches on Comics, rate and review. Why not? You're just sitting there, right?
Boop, boop.
Just in general. Just do it in general,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, just do it in general.
Just if you get around to it, just do it.
Nice job of bringing all these emotional tensions in. And one of the things that I find is so frustrating sometimes in the MCU is how things are like introduced as a big tension and then they're just like dropped because it's like they don't care anymore. They want to move on. It's time for Ultron. Like, yeah. we can't talk about that anymore.
We're over here now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really... it gives such a layered experience where you're like, I rewatched them all after seeing 6 because I was like, I need to know like what's here. And it's like you pointed out, Steph, that moment when Kitty is like, stop it. You're like, oh man, that's a whole different feel now.
It is. And like folks were like, what am I missing? And I'm like, okay, y'all are doing too much. You're not missing anything. But you, I mean, if anything, you're just missing the impact of these earlier scenes now that
it's so emotional.
Yes. And it's so messed up though, because now you know that stop it was like her real personality or whatever trying to surface or whatever. And like her husband is like choking in front of her. So it just, this show and the way that it is storytelling has just been, I don't know, like really something for me to like experience and watch, because I just love the way that they're doing it. The way that they've incorporated sitcoms and the very meta takes on sitcoms, as well as the Marvel Universe on the whole. Like, they're taking jabs. Like, it's kind of reminding me of Harley Quinn in a way that show takes jabs at stuff that happens in the DC comics and also like DC comic fans, because like I wrote something like, in a world full of Tyler Haywards, be a Monica Rambeau, because mm-hmm. Tyler is really quick to call Wanda a victimizer. And she's kind of like, but we don't have all of the information. Is what's happening questionable? And that's putting it lightly. Yes. But like, we don't know if this is fully Wanda's doing, or if it is like not taking into account everything that has happened to lead up to then. I think that's very important if we're going to talk about transformative justice and understanding what brought this person to this point so that we can apply it to their rehabilitation. So, man, like, it's just really doing a good job. I can't shut up about it.
Well, and then the way that Monica, you know, is able to name what Wanda is feeling. She's like, it's called grief.
Mm-hmm.
Grief makes people do really strange things, even things when we're cognizant of it. And when you think of someone with Wanda's abilities, and it's beyond, you know, we're sort of teasing out as we get into these later episodes that it's semi-conscious, or it wasn't conscious, and now it's a questionable amount of conscious. And even in those conversations she has with Quicksilver in episode 6, where I love that he's like, I'm not judging, I'm impressed. like, all right, that's siblings right there. like, that's cute. But I think that there's so much power in Monica's ability to be like, I was terrified, I was hurt, I was submerged. But I know what was underneath that. And that's something that we call grief. And everyone else is around her. And you know, you'd think if half the population had disappeared for 5 years, you'd think people would be aware of what grief does to people. But hey, whatever. Hayward, you dick. I live with a lot of grief. And I think one of the things people don't realize is grief never goes away. Mm-hmm. You just learn to live with it. And so, you know, my father passed away like 6 years ago now. And maybe even longer, it might be more like 8 now. And I still cry. Like, I will just cry because I miss my dad. And I, you know, my dog died a year and some change ago, and I miss my dog. I just cry about him, you know? And I think I always will. I think those will always be emotions that are close to the surface, because grief is a form of love when it can't be reciprocated anymore. So Monica's coming with all this like empathy and knowledge and personal experience to someone in pain. And she's saying, why are you trying to fight someone in pain? Like, why do you think you can beat her? You know, it's like part of it. Like, if Wanda is our problem, Wanda must be our solution. And when she said that, I was like, drop the mic.
It works, right? Because I think it's very important. And this is why I said that WandaVision is Wanda's Avengers disassembled in House of M, but like the writers actually care about Wanda's trauma, her grief. It's very much that, because no matter how this ends up panning out, whether it's like Wanda's been in full control and she understands what she's doing, or she has been manipulated in some way, when Monica said that, it gave Wanda her agency. And I think that's very important. Like, you can tell the story without it being like this mad woman who is consumed by grief and can't control herself, but they don't do that. They show that there's this woman who is in immense amounts of grief. And she is powerful, and the way that she is dealing with her trauma, you know, if it's her or she's being manipulated in some way, the point is that Wanda is in control to an extent, and way more than Avengers Disassemble or House of M could ever, you know, lead us to believe. And I just love that, because it's going to have to be Wanda, but I think Monica is going to be the person to get us to that point. And I love that, because it works for both Wanda and Monica's stories, because their grief parallels. Like, their stories kind of parallel one another. Like, there are connections. It makes me think of the movie Fast Color.
Because
it's a movie about Black women dealing with trauma. So, of course, they're not the same, but it's still giving me Fast Color energy, because, you know, working through trauma is ugly.
Yeah.
Period. You know, it's no way that you can put it into like this neat Twitter thread or, you know, podcast episode or whatever. Like, it is ugly, and it does not. Sometimes you still end up losing, or things still come out of the wash dirty. And I love that the show is doing a fairly good job so far of towing that line. It's a very thin line because it can go either way. And we've seen it go either way a lot by less capable hands. And the fact that Monica, in dealing with her grief, in turn, will be able to help Wanda, I hope. I like the way that they've been connected in that way. I hate that it's so, you know, sad, but also at the same time, like, sad shit happens. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It just depends on how you handle it.
Part of life, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's totally it, Steph. I think you've said so much so perfectly. I really do like the way their stories are tied. And I like that Monica's story is tied to multiple superheroes in the MCU. I think that's a very cool way of bringing her in as this sort of like person empathizing with heroes. And then, you know, I saw those x-rays. I know what the fuck's up. I can't wait.
So real quick. I had written this piece and then like I got like a full on galaxy brain with it. And it was basically talking about how I think that Monica has gotten her powers from going through the hex twice. And then this whole thing where folks were like, well, no, we think that she got her powers beforehand. But I'm like, but how would that make sense? Because you don't know what her scans look like prior.
I love that you're just flexing. I love that you're like, hey, called it.
Yeah, and I'm like, that doesn't really make any sense. Like, I think she probably got them going in or coming out or whatever. Like, I believe that's when her powers were activated because I feel like maybe this is their way of opening the door. Not saying, but like just opening the door for like X-Men and mutants to be to come about. So if Monica ends up being a mutant, I won't necessarily be mad about that as long as she has, you know, her power set. And also they're building her character. So that also makes me kind of not really care in that regard because, well, she's a fully fleshed out character. So however she gets her powers, it's fine with me. But it just doesn't make sense storytelling wise to have her go in the hex and come out the hex and then to have her scans come out blank and to have her blood work show that her DNA is, you know, her molecules and everything are being rewritten to just say like, oh, yeah, yeah, she had these powers. She got them sometime. You'll find out in Captain Marvel 2. Like, what sense does that make storytelling wise?
It makes no sense at all. No sense at all. Okay, so I'm kind of like, oh, snap. Like, is it going to be that when she goes back in a third time, is that what's going to, like, break the... I don't know. I've just been thinking about it a lot. So how do you feel like it compares to the origin story from Spider-Man 14 or whatever it is?
Very similar. Again, somebody did their homework, and I was very interested in how they would do this because Carol Danvers gets her story beats in that regard in Captain Marvel because she smashes a machine that has all this energy and all of, you know, whatever. So there is Marvel Team Up 142 and 143 that features Monica Rambeau, Spider-Man, and Star Fox. And in this issue, Monica is like, I don't know, like I think she's off work. She's at a museum and like some pride is in this for sure. They're very terrible. And I hate that they have that name because it's just not fair. But Pride is trying to steal something called a Windstone because this doctor who is kind of like Thanos in the way that he feels that if we get rid of half the people, then we'll have more resources. It's just kind of like, no, you could just double the resources maybe. I don't know. But anyway, this machine generates the same.
Yeah, talk about like a lack of critical fucking thinking. Okay, I have to. Every time I watch it. Infinity Wars, this is how I feel. And I'm just like, do you know the reason we don't have enough resources? Billionaires are why we don't have enough resources for everyone. It's a fucked up argument. It makes no sense. Fuck you, Thanos.
So back to this real quick. This energy disruptor is just like the one that Monica destroyed. And we find out how Monica's powers work. And when she turns herself into energy, her physical form is then transported to another dimension, like an energy plane. And Spider-Man is there actually being helpful for real by kind of theorizing this. And this is how he and Star Fox are able to help her because she's stuck in her energy form after Spider-Man doesn't actually destroy the generator. It just goes into another dimension, but she can't like revert back into her physical form. So saying all of this, that energy generator or whatever also harbored like some cosmic microwave background radiation. I have that all together, CMBR. And that's what the hex is giving us. So that is why. So that's why I believe that Monica does get her powers from this force field or energy field that Wanda has put up, because it functions in a very similar fashion to the energy generators that Monica has been in contact with that has given her powers and also interfered with them. So I had a real big like moment as I was writing. I felt like a mad woman as I was writing. I was like, oh my God, this makes sense. And also to point out that it's hard to like break into the energy field unless Monica like lets you in. So in that regard, that's another reason why I felt like Monica would be the key to also helping Wanda and Vision, because I spoke about this earlier, Monica actually destroys an energy field that no one can actually get through by shattering, destroying it or whatever. But I think from the previews, we see that whatever space engineer they called up, like, put together something so they can enter it back without, you know, feeling the effects of the hex. But I think it's all very cool because clearly someone has been reading like these older comics and like coming up with different ways to like, you know, retell the story.
Chills. I cannot wait. I'm so glad they gave Monica not just a small role or a two-bit role. She's so important to what happens in WandaVision, you know, and it's so exciting to see her given some damn due finally. In this modern era, like, we're actually seeing her do some really cool shit. We've talked briefly about Next Wave and Divas, and I think so much of what they do that is so frustrating for me, and I think this is true for both of you, so tell me where I'm wrong, is that they flatten Monica. They flatten all the characters, and and they, you know, try to make them what they're trying to make, if that makes sense. So, like, I want to do a Sex and the City, so I'm going to make Monica into whatever, you know? Just, like, why is this happening? Why? And it's exciting to see.
I just remembered Sex and the City, Marvel Divas. So funny. Go ahead. Sorry. God,
just like, who's asking for that? Ugh.
The thing is that if you wanted to do like this superhero team that is similar to Sex and the City, then get characters that fit those characters, right?
Exactly. And let them have some sex on the page.
Yes. And they kind of have, like, let Monica do that a little bit. But then they make Brother Voodoo, like, this creep. And I didn't like that because, like, that's not really Brother Voodoo's bag either.
No.
And Monica's constantly has these thought bubbles that are just bullshit. Yeah. Like, she's like, the first thing she thinks when her friend is diagnosed with cancer is like, what if I get it? And I just, I don't see that as Monica's first thought. Would it occur to her somewhere down the line? Maybe, probably, definitely. But her first thought? No, come on. Come on.
It just wouldn't be that. And
I feel like her first thought would be like, how can I fix this?
Yes, it really honestly would be that. And again, like, you could, I mean, question mark, but like in theory, you could do a Marvel team up where you, like, you know, pay homage or whatever to Sex and the City, but you have to pick characters that kind of fit those characters. Because with Living Heroes, where I was inspired by Living Single, it works because those characters that I picked also fit the characters from that show. So I'm not really trying to like force somebody into this role. Like, Storm is giving you Regine.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. Especially when it comes to her hair. Which is like, I've always had perfect hair. Oh my God, it's so funny.
It's Regine. And like for Misty Knight for Sinclair, like that still works because I just feel like Sinclair and Misty definitely have more similarities than you could see on the surface, because they're still going to tell you the way that it is, but maybe Sinclair is more in a funny way. So like, just lean into that. Like, Misty can be funny.
Yep.
For Monica, she's definitely Khadija.
She is so Khadija.
For like so many reasons. And, you know, She-Hulk is definitely eating someone's food and like not...
Oh, so like, my God, She-Hulk.
It all works. And like, Sam Wilson as a himbo, I think, would benefit that character way more than what's going on with him now. I'm just being honest. But like, it works. Like, you can do that. But with Marvel Divas, like, you can tell the person who wrote this really didn't know too much about these characters. They just had an idea. The editor said, sure, yeah, we'll figure it out. And they never really
actually figured it out. I mean, had they even seen Sex and the City? Like, I get, like, none of that for me worked. Like, it doesn't
work. It was like four women. All right.
Oh, Sex and the City.
And they're in the city? Yeah. Because, like, they have a moment where they consider themselves, like C-list or D-list superheroes, because there's a moment where Sue Storm,
Emma Frost. Girls,
yeah, like, they all show up, and it's just kind of like, oh, well, these A-listers are here, so what are we going to do? And I'm like, I don't get that vibe. Like, that didn't really...
How would Storm and Monica not be friends? Like, what universe is... I don't know. People also, I feel like, misread Storm a lot. They, try and make her, like, an ice queen. And I'm like, no, that's Emma Frost. Like, come on, pay attention. It's in the name.
So the problem with Storm, and Monica too suffers from this, and Misty, is that the way that folks view Black women, it's either one or the other. So for like Storm, she's regal. So she would just lean into all the regalness and it turns into the Ice Queen type shit. And it's just not that. Because Storm is someone who, like, Storm lips blood off of a blade of a knife. So can she be regal? Yes. But she can also get down and dirty. And she's also someone who is down to go shopping. You know, like, she can be very laid back. Misty Knight.
Yeah, like, she always takes kitty shopping way back in the day. You know, like, that's one of her favorite things. They just won't let any of the Black female characters be complex. They want them to be so one-dimensional. So you can be like, oh, Storm is... This character is this. And it's like, well, she's that and she's these other 45 things because she's a person.
Yes, it's simply that. It's simply like, please remember that these characters are people, but they hardly ever do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of what makes Living Heroes so damn delightful. Everyone's complex, and I love the way that all the different characters, like, interact with each other. I've been doing a big Living Single rewatch, and I'm just like, oh my god, it's so perfect. And, like, the moments when She-Hulk is just, like, straight, just exactly Maxine. You know, you're just like, this is one-to-one. These are the same character. It's just like, you know, she has a huge hoagie in her mouth or whatever, and it's just like you're dying laughing.
It made sense. I'm happy that it made sense. Because if it didn't, like, I never would have, you know, written it or whatever. And I think that's another thing. I'm pretty sure, like, that person was like, yeah, Sex and the City, Marvel characters, this will be amazing. And the women who pick up comics will absolutely love this. And it's like, no, you couldn't have been further from the truth.
Because they were still marketing to men for the most part, right? Even in, like, 2009, like, they're still just like... Okay, well, this is for women, but, like, she's definitely going to be wearing, like, a corset the whole time, right? And it's just like, cool. Well, maybe it's not for women. I mean, I'm just going out on a limb.
It's so frustrating. And that's why now when I saw that omnibus for Monica Rambeau and, like, I actually went through the stories. So there are two Marvel, I think it's Marvel Fanfare. And I think that's 42, and I'm getting 43. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those, I love how Dracula and the Marvel Universe is like equal opportunity when it comes to someone's neck. Like, he's he is, because he and Monica, Monica has an interaction with Dracula, and like Dracula wants Monica to stay and like bites her neck and all this other stuff. But that's actually a pretty fun story, because it takes place in New Orleans. And then there's another story which isn't too fun and is a victim of the time, and it's basically also in New Orleans. It takes place, and Monica like saves this young woman who is a junkie from committing suicide. And another podcast episode, but like, we got to talk about how the big two, because DC was someone who did this, the perpetrator, I should say, of doing this.
If we were to borrow WandaVision, a victimizer.
Yeah, a victimizer in utilizing their Black characters to like do these messages.
Mm-hmm. Very special messages. Yeah.
Very special episode. And it's just kind of, but in the way that they do it, it's very disingenuous too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't work out at all. Mm-hmm. It's actually very annoying, because there is a message that Monica has in her second one shot, the Captain Marvel one shot that came out in 94, where they're talking about racism. The Sons of Serpents are there, but the whole vibe is still cool because it's very still true to her character, and it doesn't feel so ham-fisted in a way where it's kind of like, okay, someone was like, hey, we got to do this thing because bad stuff's happening and like we don't want to be left out on having commentary on that. So let's do this thing, but very much still in line with her story. Because it just happens, like Punisher turned black for 4 issues so that they could go to Chicago with Luke Cage and talk about crack.
And they're just perpetrating harmful myths. Like that's always how it is. They're not actually examining the issue, but they're just like, have you noticed? It's bad, right?
And
it's
yeah, they never talk about the antecedents. There's no like, oh, how did any of this begin? It's just like, look at this individual with their individual responsibility.
Yeah, and if only they could have made the right choices, everything would have been fine. And it's just like, well, all right, that's not true, but
right.
So one of my entree points into comics is absolutely Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel run. There's a pretty big moment where Monica comes in there. Captain Marvel's on her, like, tour of being a bad, angry bitch, which is fun. It's from volume 1, so I don't know what issue exactly it is, but Monica is somewhere investigating something and they run into each other. And what happens in the moment is it's a lot of Monica saying, like, Carol, you just, like, took my name. What's funny, though, is she doesn't just come out and say it. She just goes, okay, Captain Marvel. Okay, Captain Marvel. And Carol's like, fuck, Monica, that is annoying. And I am frustrated. And then what it comes down to at the end is Monica says, hey, like, it's fine if you take the name if I'm not using it, but it's kind of like dating an old boyfriend. You should at least give me a phone call. And I want to know what you think of that.
So I'm going back and forth about that for like the last, I think since the Captain Marvel movie came out. And I feel differently about it, depending on the day. So today, I'm annoyed by it because Monica kind of comes at it in a very passive-aggressive way before actually saying what's wrong. And I don't think that was actually very fair or true to Monica's character because we just said she's somebody who calls it like she sees it. So she isn't someone who would like beat around the bush when it came to that. For Carol to finally be like, you know, yo, what's really going on? I just kind of feel like it would have better served Monica's character to just have her address that head on instead of kind of like that passive aggressive nitpicky thing that she does with her name.
Yeah, I see your point. I think in the moment it reads a little bit less passive aggressive because they're, you know, they're talking about a mission. So it's kind of like tangential and they kind of wait till the action's over to have the rest of the conversation. But no, I mean, I think that's a good point. It was one of the moments I think I liked most about Monica because I liked that she was, you know, in the Captain Marvel run, I should say, the Kelly Sue DeConnick Captain Marvel run. I liked that she was so willing to be like, people are afraid of Carol, you know?
Yeah,
and
I
loved that exactly. Monica wasn't. And I think that's what I was drawn to. But now after our conversation, that's why I wanted to bring it up. Because I was like, it hits differently, you know, when you really think about who Monica is.
And that's the thing. Because like I said, like I feel differently about it on different days. But the first time I read it, because I wasn't so familiar with Monica's background, it didn't bother me because I felt the same way you did, actually. But it wasn't until like I read it again after like really getting to know like who Monica is, what makes her tick and all of that, where I was kind of like, ooh, you know, still fine, but also like it was still kind of passive aggressive in nature. Because I'm like, I read it again, I'm like, I didn't feel that at first, but now I feel it. And no, like, I'm happy that they addressed it, but I'm like, it just could have been done just a little better. But I mean, to an extent, like, Monica's character is present in the way that she's just like, hey, cool that you're using this name, but like, just hit me up. Like, we've had interactions before, so it's not like you've never, like, we've never spoken.
Right,
we've been Avengers at the same time. You were kind of leaving out the door as I was coming in, and then like we've had like our little run-ins or whatever, but like, you know who I am, I know who you are, so like, call me up.
Yeah, I like that. What I take to be one of the running themes of today's episode is like, there are ways to do twists on characters, but you have to really remember who they are. And especially when there's someone who is so underrepresented and misrepresented. If we don't acknowledge that when we think about who's writing her, like white people need to actually be very careful when writing black characters. I know that hurts some people's feelings. I don't understand why, but I think that it makes sense that we would have to really think about what are all the pieces of Monica and how do we make sure those show up on the page without flattening her or shoving her into these more stereotypical moments. Like they really do make her, you know, I'm going to come back to it because I hated it so much. In Marvel Divas, she does get this sort of weird, sassy black friend treatment. And it's just like, no one needs that. No one needs that. Monica is not a sassy black friend. And, you know, that is not who black women are. Like, why is that the only fucking trope? So I think it's exciting to talk about Monica. It's exciting to see where she's going in WandaVision. I feel like there's so much potential there. And it's nice that it feels very connected to where she comes from, you know?
Yeah, it does. And again, if you are finding yourself more and more interested in this character, for the love of God, do not read Next Wave first. Do not let that be your introduction to Monica Rambeau. Don't let Marvel Divas be your introduction to Monica Rambeau. Like, please, I'm begging. And I know that older comics can scare folks because of just, like, it's just their setup is just very different from modern age comics. And like, I get it, but there are some really great Monica moments throughout Avengers, from Avengers 227 to Avengers 294. Monica Rambeau is just being flat out amazing in ways that you don't expect for black characters, but especially a black woman who is on a team like the Avengers. Like, this is a mainline team. It's not like, you know, the Thunderbolts.
Yeah, exactly. She is the leader of the Avengers. Like, what is happening? I think you're right. I think those early issues are really great. So actually, Comic Book Herald has a Monica Rambeau reading order. What I'll say is it's not very evaluative. It's more informational. So it's not going to tell you, oh, in this one, there's a horrific representation.
Right.
Or,
they just do lists.
You know, sexual assault. Right. And that's not their goal. They're just trying to provide the information. So if you go check that one out, though, and look, they have the Avengers numbers. So between in that big chunk Steph is talking about, they've named like the important ones that she features in to read of those. So if you're really intimidated, like I think you're right, Steph, people are intimidated by older comics. Like that's a nice soft entry point. So Comic Book Herald has the Monica Rambeau reading order.
And it's really good, y'all. Go check it out.
Yeah. Monica's the best. I mean, I will say one of the things that I think is defining about her, and tell me where I'm wrong, is that she always has a really great costume.
You know what? Hands down. And it cannot be said for a lot of folks, but for the most part, like Monica's costumes have been on point, even up into the current one now. Like, I love that she's kept the trench coat because I do like that. I just love a trench coat. If ever I get a chance, I want to write a Marvel comic that is just like the trench coat gang. It would be Monica, Gambit, and I'm missing two other people right now. But I just think it'd be fun.
I was like, well, Johnny Blaze.
Yes.
In the 90s, not really since, but there was like the trench coat phase. Blade sometimes.
Trench coat just like sets off. It just sets off your outfit, you know?
Trench coat.
It flows
cool.
Nicely in the wind.
Like, actually,
okay, I'm in.
Monica and Gambit should have had a team up of some sort a long time ago, and I don't know how this hasn't happened. I actually thought about this briefly before the story actually ended up submitting to Marvel for Marvel Voices Legacy, but like I was going to do a Monica and Gambit, like a team up. Like they ran into each other because they're getting their trench coats like at the cleaners in New Orleans or whatever. And I don't know. Like I'll still try to do that if I can. If not, then I'll just do it in But What If Though. But there should have been a Monica and Gambit team up at some point. They're both from Louisiana. Like, just go ahead and do it. It would be fun. It's Monica and it's Gambit. Like, you couldn't have two characters who, one, wouldn't normally be in the same space, but like to have them play off one another, I think would work very well because I could see Monica being like the straight laced character to Gambit's more goofy side. And
in your deft hands, I would read it. In another person's, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a shit show.
For me, Gambit is like about execution because a lot of Gambit,
the writer of Marvel Divas.
Oh my, like, I have to see what else they've written because I need to know what else they've done.
You guys are like the people who are like, oh, I need to know what else they've written so I can read it. I'm like, I need to know what else they've written so I can avoid it.
No, I need to see like what, like what is really going on.
Oh my gosh. Well, Steph, this has been an absolute delight. And we get to see, you know, more of Monica in your upcoming comic. Will you go ahead and tell people about it one more time?
Yes. Yeah, so Marvel Voices Legacy number one will be out on February 24th. My Monica Rambeau story features her, her mom, She-Hulk, and Thor. They are at a supermarket. It gets a little chaotic. The actual title of it is actually called Panic at the Supermarket because I was listening to Panic at the Disco as I wrote the script out. And it's just something that I feel like is very relatable to folks who shop with their parents from time to time, or like just an older family member, period. Because it just never, it's never ending. Like, it never goes the way that it's supposed to go. And that's just kind of what happens in the story. But there's also a moment between Monica and her mom that I'm just like, no matter what, I'm putting this in here because I need everybody to understand how important her parents are to just her overall history and why she's able to be as amazing as she is.
Mm. I cannot wait. I ordered mine in advance. I'm like, give to me now, please. So I will be reading it very quickly on the 24th and texting you over and over, I'm sure. Thank you so much for joining us today, Steph. It's always a pleasure to have you on, talk about who, what matters to us in comics. And I mean, I think the three of us all love Monica so much. It feels truly incredible to just spend a whole episode talking about her. Any final thoughts, Sarah?
Nope, that's going to do it for me. I really like Monica Rambeau. And if you don't know that by the end of this episode, I'm sure that we'll have another episode where I remind you.
Totally perfect. All right, Steph, thank you. Sarah, I love you. You're perfect.
I love everyone in this call.
Okay, the end.
We're a podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it, so we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And yeah, remember, there's no I in bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm S.E. Fleenor. You can learn more about me at sefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.